What's easier, giving talks with slides or talks with no slides?
So there are two sort of types of presentations. There are the ones with slides and there are the ones that are sort of off the cuff, no slides. And the ones I get more nervous for are the ones without slides, because it's just like me and my thoughts, as opposed to like using slides as a teleprompter, like what a politician would do. And it's much more difficult actually to speak like this, like I'm speaking to the class right now, compared to having like slides to fall back on. Sometimes one is inclined to feel like excited, oh, I don't have to prepare slides, but it's a curse and a blessing.
What are some strategies for avoiding non-words like like, and so?
The reason people use words like so and like, you know, and it's funny how in different languages they're actually a little bit different, which is funny. And like how on the Great British Baking Show, they always, so we have a little daughter who is sleeping upstairs when we watch the Great British Baking Show. So we have the title, the subtitles on the bottom. And apparently in Britain, is erm, but that's how they write it. And anyway, I always thought that was funny. But anyway, how can you not lose your train of thought, as I'm tempted to do right now? How can you not lose your train of thought if you're trying to avoid using those non-words? Well, the first thing is that avoiding the non-words isn't as important as like a speech coach will tell you it is. If you look at some of the greatest speakers in history, and I think most people would agree that like former President Barack Obama was one of the greatest speakers in history. When he's speaking off the cuff, he uses non-words a lot. He also uses pauses a lot, but what he's saying still comes off as very thoughtful. And so the first thing is that if you're tempted to use and like a lot, it's not a big deal. And your conversation partner will tend to look past those things. Of course, you wouldn't want to put it in writing, but there's a big difference between listening to somebody speak and reading their writing. In writing, incoherence and incomplete sentences and starting and stopping of the same sentences would be really annoying to read. But if you're talking to somebody speaking in that manner, it's not that big a deal. So the first thing is, don't worry about it as much as you might be inclined to worry about it. The second thing, related, you know, more to the point of how to not lose your concentration, is to put mental ums in place of the spoken ums. So if you are using a pause in a way you might ordinarily use or like, or you know, it is much easier to maintain your speaking cadence. And I think what you might find is that it actually becomes easier, not more difficult, to find the next word or the next sentence that you want to say. So that might not work for everybody, but it's something that helped me.
Do you find it calming or comforting to hold on to an object when giving a presentation?
That's totally true. That's totally true. I actually have, I usually have two things to hold in my hand. Actually, I'm holding a twisty tie from like some snack bag or something in my hand right now as we speak. I always have something to fidget with. It's usually a pen. It's usually this pen. When you're speaking, you can use the remote slide advancer. So this is the remote slide advancer that I really like. It's the It's a Logitech. It has forward and backward function on it. It also has a little haptic timer thing, so you can like time your presentation and it will warn you when you're five minutes away from the end. It'll do like a, it'll like buzz in your hand like a phone. And also Logitech in particular has this very nice type of plastic that they make their stuff out of. It feels very good in the hand. But one item in the hand is sometimes not good enough. So I also often, I don't know if I have it here, but I often also use a laser pointer as well, because sometimes the one that comes on these remote slide advancers is not very powerful. And in a big room, like a big auditorium, it's often really difficult for the audience to see the laser pointer on the screen. So I also have the second device in my hand, and it's
What's the best way to prepare for a Q&A session?
Yeah, so the best way to prepare for a Q&A session is to make the backup slides and then to not use them. So if you're giving a talk, a lot of times, okay, let me back up. When I was an undergraduate, I made flashcards for everything. Like I would put all of my exam problems and solutions on the fronts and backs of flashcards. I would put all the homework problems and solutions on flashcards. I would put things from the, like facts from the lecture notes on flashcards, just like normal 3x5 cards. And what I found from that exercise is that I probably only went through them once. Like what I would do is I would carry them around like on the bus. I would carry them like literally while walking down the street. And I would like, maybe I'd go through them once. But the process of making them is what created all the questions and answers in my head. And it turns out I didn't really need them that often, which was because most of the exercise in, most of the value derived from the exercise of actually making the flashcards to begin with. So that's a very, that's analogous to the backup slides in your presentation that you do not intend to use, but in the preparation of those backup slides, you're able to answer questions about those topics. So that could even be like if your presentation is 10 slides and you think of like the five most likely questions that you're likely to get. And I guess there's a reason why you're not putting that information in the main talk, probably because you don't think it's as important as what's in the 10 slides, the main 10 slides. But it is useful to anticipate that next level of depth of questions that the audience might ask. And in preparing the backup slides, you will have already gone through the process of answering them. Now, as I said in the video, it is not always a good idea to go to the backup slide unless it's like, unless you really have a good reason for showing it. It's often better just to refer to it, just to refer to the information. Because as soon as it's on the screen and you're not 100% comfortable talking about it, and there's probably a reason it's a backup slide and not a regular slide, is that you don't necessarily want to answer the question about the answer to the question. So there's a little bit of strategy involved there, but it's, you know, it's forcing yourself to answer the questions in anticipation of being asked.
At what level of complexity should you prepare your spoken remarks?
It is almost always better to speak in a jargon-free, relatively slow, and a manner of speaking where you do not assume anything. Especially if there are a lot of people in the audience. Psychologically, this helps because the people who are experts already will feel smart because they already know what you're saying. And there is also a lot of effective complexity in what you are saying that an expert will be able to understand some of the nuances without you having to state them explicitly. Even when an expert uses simple language, there is a lot under the surface that another expert is able to divine from their manner of speaking. A good example is, suppose that you take a class and everything is new to you for the first time. Say you take it as a freshman, and then you say it's the first class in your major, and then you continue taking classes. You have taken maybe 6 other classes or maybe 12 other classes in that field or related fields. And then in your senior year, you go back and you tutor, or you're a TA for that first class, and you get to see all the information again. How much more can you get out of it the second time? Probably a lot. And it's not just because you're seeing it for the second time, it's because your brain can now flesh out all of the space between the facts that the professor or the book are presenting. And that's a type of effective complexity in communication that allows you to take advantage of the experience of the listener or the reader to read between the lines and extract more value beyond just the detail of the particular language that you're using. And so the point of that is to say that an expert, if you're talking about sophisticated stuff, but you're using simple language and simple analogies, the experts will get it. And they'll even be able to go beyond the language. They'll understand more than what you're just saying. Whereas that same type of language will not make the inexperienced reader or the inexperienced listener feel like they're hopelessly behind. They'll still be able to catch up at the level commensurate with the level of preparation they come in with, whereas the expert will still be able to derive a lot of value from what you're saying.
How do you get better at giving talks?
Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily come with doing more presentations. It comes with experimentation in presentation. So it's related to doing more presentations, but it's about experimentation. It's about attending more presentations. I think that using tricks like teaching your audience from the top down and then creating these tensions and resolving these tensions or creating these puzzles and then solving the puzzles are all tactics that one can use at different levels of organization within the same presentation. So at first, when you give the background and say you can use 25 to 30% of your slides just to set up the main puzzle, you can also do that within the particular, within the sequence of the rest of the 70-75% of slides. You do that by having the last bit of information, maybe it's a bullet point, maybe it's just something you say at the end of one slide that leads naturally into the next. You don't want to be in a position where you click the slide forward and the next slide is you're like, oh yeah, this slide is in here, you know, I forgot that this slide was in here. Even if you didn't literally forget that it was in here, it doesn't have coherence with the previous slide because there's no like logical reason for it to follow next. So you want to set up your presentation in such a way that it's like running downhill. You set up this big problem, you solve it in a cascaded manner where one stage sets the stage for the next. One slide sets the stage for the next. One problem that you're discussing and your solution to it sets the stage for the next one. So it is about creating tension, resolving tension within the listener or viewer's mind, but it can occur over multiple different length scales, if you will. And I think that approach, along with creating the bins in people's minds by using there are, there is type phrases, are very powerful in not losing people. Because once you've like lost them, once you're five slides in and they have no idea what you're talking about, then you know you can forget it.
Is it possible to be too polished in your presentation style?
Sometimes there will be presentation coaches who are so good at it that it's fake and not engaging. It's like engaging for the entertainment value, like this is a professional presenter, like an actor at an actor who happens to be employed by a business school, but it ends up looking not genuine and it lacks humility. So if it means you have to be a little bit vulnerable, you might have to go for that, you know, cheesy joke. You might use a lot of likes and ums. It actually humanizes you to the audience. And as long as you haven't lost them or made them like totally cringe, you're usually in pretty good shape. And I think that those types of presentations tend to be better than like the absolute most polished TED Talk could possibly be. It's somewhere between like improv comedy and a TED Talk. That's where you want to be.
Are there strategies for giving effective talks over Zoom? How does it differ from giving talks in person?
So this is something that we've all become experts in over the last 14 months. and it is not easy. Like I would, right before this class started, I went back to Ravel College and I said, please let me make this hybrid. Most people will have access to the vaccine by then. They can start, you know, we can do it in one of the big outdoor spaces. And because it was too late in the process and I couldn't actually do it. So, and as a result, you have Zoom, like, so for people who were on campus or lived down here, I would have, you know, had the hybrid version available in person, and I would have preferred it that way. The best thing that I can say about Zoom is, one, encourage at least a few people to keep their camera on. So thank you, Daniel, Jaden, Melody, you three are at the top of my screen, so I can look at you while I'm talking, or as if it were just your avatar or your initials, this presentation would be no good. So not everybody has to have their camera on, but at least a few people have to be brave. So to me, it makes a big difference if you're giving a presentation or you're in a class or you're in a breakout room. You can gently encourage people to turn their camera on and even like make a joke, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, judge, you know, if your kitchen's messy or something. And I know like I'm not technically like allowed, I can't make people turn their camera on because it's like, it could also be regarded as intrusive. And I mean, hey, if we're all, you know, having to bear through this pandemic, and we want to do it, you know, in PJs and go to class while we're doing other things, that's like fine too. I'm not gonna stop you from doing that. So that's one huge thing for me. The first class that I taught, actually it was this class last year, nobody turned their camera on, and it was really, really, it wasn't bad. Like, you know, I still got decent feedback, but it was, it felt bad to me, like literally talking into a wall. Another thing that helps to do is to get like a, if you're going to be doing it a lot, is to get a standalone microphone. This seems like, you know, how much of a professional, you know, presenter do we really want to be? But they're not like that expensive, like a USB mic, and the quality of the audio is much, much better, even through Zoom, which is compressed a lot, and it always comes out on the other end really bad. But you've all been on talk, you've all been to presentations, you've all been to classes. Probably some of your professors are using like equipment that sounds horrible in your ears, and that's a pretty like distracting thing to have to like go through. Other things on Zoom in particular, encourage use of the chat box. So some classes do this a lot, other classes don't. Like there are some aspects of Zoom that are really difficult to implement in a real world setting. So in the fall, when we're all back on campus, I'm actually going to miss having all of your names under your faces there and having the whole class roster there. That has been really valuable to me to like get to know students, put faces to names, be able to have conversations with people. Even sometimes like there's a student that I've had in a Zoom class that I see on the street and I recognize them and I know their name, and I don't always know their name, especially in like a big lecture class. So that's really valuable. The polling function, like if you can find a couple places in your talk maybe to do a poll, to have some engagement with the audience, that's actually a lot easier to do on Zoom than it is in person without like a clicker. And clickers are really annoying. So you know, make yourself audible. Try to get some engagement with the audience by encouraging at least a few people to keep their camera on, and then use aspects of Zoom that, like, if we're going to be stuck here on Zoom, we might as well take advantage of the things that Zoom gives us that in-person interaction does not give us, even if overall in-person interaction is better.
How has your experience been giving talks over Zoom for more than a year?
So there are two types of presentations that I give. There is formal coursework types of presentations like lecturing, and then there are lectures that I give that are intended for like technical audiences. So for example, 2 weeks ago, I gave a presentation, actually it was during class time, which is why I had to cancel class, that was for the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and I gave a talk in their materials science department. So I was their like seminar speaker. Normally this would entail me getting up early, getting on a plane, flying to Chicago, then taking a puddle jumper plane down to Champaign, Illinois, and then giving a talk there probably the next morning, and then probably have three meals there, meeting with faculty and students all day, and then giving my talk sometime during the day, and spending another night at a hotel, and then coming back the next day. So probably two full days of travel and other stuff, whereas I gave that talk right here and I didn't have to travel at all. But anyway, that wasn't the question you asked. The question you asked was how has preparing for the talk changed in remote times? To be honest, not a ton in those types of talks. Teaching, it has completely changed everything with teaching. In teaching, my answer would actually be very similar. Like I prepare by, in like a normal lecture class, I prepare a lot of poll type questions. I have my class roster open. One time I took a picture of my computer screen. This is a class that I taught in the fall. And I had 11 windows open on my monitor to teach the class. I had the breakout room roster, I had the team roster, I had the Canvas page open, I had the main Zoom window open, I had the chat window open, I had I had iMessages open because the TA and I would talk to each other about like coordinating the class like in real time. I had the iPad window open. I had QuickTime open to record certain aspects of it. And I think the maximum was 11 different windows. So it's like, what was I even doing when I was teaching live? Like, what kind of immersive experience could I possibly have been creating? And like, this is using the flipped classroom style, where in all of my classes, I have some kind of video content that the students watch before the Zoom session. I just think it works way better that way, to have that kind of like asynchronous plus synchronous experience. Like it just seems to work better that way. But it's like, most of the information, like, I already delivered with the video. So it's like, what was I even doing with 11 windows open? I hope that the product turned out to be okay. But yeah, teaching remotely has changed a lot. Presentations, like a typical kind of presentation, has actually changed very little. One thing I would say, if you're giving a presentation, is to find a way to like stand up, because the energy that, like, I'm literally, like, 'cause I'm standing up now, I'm trying to mimic the energy that I would have in a normal classroom. And if I'm sitting down, like after 1:30, I want to fall asleep. So if I'm standing, I'm not going to do that. And then, you know, at least I have the appearance. I have a board back here. I could write on it if I wanted to. And that has helped in some aspects, because it makes you feel more energetic and engaged. So that's one small difference. But slide design, pretty much the same. The script I would use, pretty much the same. Yeah. Long answer for not too much additional information.